This is The Danglers, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast. One fan's exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band.
Welcome to episode 26 of the Yes Music Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine. Please remember how you can get involved with the podcast at the site where you can subscribe through RSS or iTunes, by email to the blog post and episode updates, where you can read and then comment on the show notes or the blog posts. You can follow the show on Twitter at Yes Music Podcast. You can email the show, show@yesmusicpodcast.com. You can upload a file via the link on the right-hand side, or leave a voicemail message and appear on the show yourself by calling 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417, or by recording a message straight onto the website using the record a message button on the extreme right-hand side. If you have a smartphone, you can also download and listen via the Stitcher.com app for free. This week saw an exciting appearance of photographs on Facebook of the band rehearsing in the US before heading off to the Southern Hemisphere. Final confirmation, if it was necessary, of John Davison's inclusion as lead singer. It was great to see this, but I'm slightly surprised that the social media strategy seems to be to use Facebook and not to update either the Twitter feed or the band's website. Here's hoping for a great tour, and I can't wait to talk to our friend top prog artist Ben Craven about the show he's going to. I also managed to tease the Twitter followers of the show this week by getting them to guess what album I was looking at. Ben Craven suggested Squack It, which is the collaboration between Chris Squire and Steve Hackett. At Electric Freedom wondered if it was the Yes Remixes album or Symphonic Music of Yes, and at Bronk Sam 6 suggested Key Studio. In fact, this week I've chosen an album which could be described as a slightly bizarre little footnote in Yes history. It's 9012 Live, The Solos, from 1985. I remember coming across this album in my local record shop and being very excited about the idea of having captured some of the brilliant live solo moments of the band on the, at the time, latest tour. I had already seen an edited version of the 90125 video release on TV, but looking at this album cover, here was a lot of material not on the video release. I eagerly raced home to play the cassette. I do remember being somewhat underwhelmed, so it's great to have this opportunity to listen again and re-evaluate the album over a quarter of a century later. I bought the vinyl version sometime later, and it's interesting to note that the cassette, rather misleadingly, only says 9012 Live on the cover. Maybe I even thought I was buying the whole of the soundtrack of the video. The cover itself has a version of the 90125 computer-generated Yes logo on it, with the addition of a blocky world map in the background. There are pictures of the five members of the band on the back cover, all taken from the video. The album contains two tracks taken directly from the 90125 Live video cassette, and these are the first track on each side of the record. The rest of the tracks are described as solos, despite most featuring more than one member of the band. The concerts featured were in Edmonton, Canada, and Dortmund, Germany. A fascinating little addition to the sleeve notes is an overview from Mickey Hayes, assistant tour manager, who says, "In March of 1984, this long-overdue show went on the road. Aside from seeing three continents, three tour managers, one small army of Argentinian security, encountering numerous threats, one ticket office bombing, some minor bickering and moaning, one squadron of flying saucers over Denver, lots of vodka, and surviving two international escapes, the tour went smoothly and without incident. In spite of, or perhaps as a result of all this, what ensued was a series of shows that delighted audiences everywhere. Now, for your listening pleasure, some of these magical musical moments have been preserved on wax. Enjoy and thank God for small miracles and hasty retreats." So track one is Hold On. It's a fantastic, exciting opening to the album, with John Anderson introducing Alan White on drums, and then the rest of the band piling in, led by Trevor Rabin's arena-filling guitar. The playing and the singing are tight, and the production gives a good sense of being in the venue. I feel myself compelled to sing along with the huge chorus. It's immersive and a great deal of fun to be swept along by the energy of the band. Raven's soloing keeps fairly true to the record, but he adds a few semi-improvised sounding flourishes which work well. One of the concerns I had about the live versions of the 90125 material was the use of electronic effects. How would the band cope with this live? At about 6 minutes 40 of Hold On, there is one of these sections. There are sound effects and electronic percussion. Whether these are reproduced by way of triggering the sounds from the onstage instruments, or doing more analog impressions of the digital effects is not absolutely clear, but whatever the techniques used, the effect is convincing and seamless in the context of the live performance. Trevor Rabin's staggering virtuosity and dexterity shines through, and the whole band are in perfect harmony throughout the track. The last section of the song is given a great expansive treatment, with Squire's bassline soaring upwards before the last recapitulation of the chorus, and the addition of a clever closing figure, shared by the whole band. It's a scintillating opening and leaves me hungry for more. The second track, Psy, is labelled Tony K Solo on the sleeve notes. It starts with quite sci-fi sounding washes of sound, from which mysterious fast-moving high melodies emerge. It does sound very much like the soundtrack to a science fiction movie, before a church organ sound enters. This has some of the grandeur of previous Yes use of organ, recalling Rick Wakeman's Going for the One work, for example. However, in a move more like Jeff Downes on drama, Kay then introduces the opening bars from J.S. Bach's Toccata and Fugue in D minor, which was memorably covered in pseudo-prog rock fashion by Sky in 1980. It sounds like Kay fluffs a note towards the beginning of the Bach section, but overall it's a very effective passage, even if it does almost turn into the incidental music to dodgy BBC homemade sci-fi series Blake 7. The entire track only lasts 2 minutes and 40 seconds, so it's certainly not on the scale of other progressive keyboard solos from the likes of Rick Wakeman. However, in the context of 90125 live stage shows, maybe it was just what was needed. Up next is guitar maestro Trevor Rabin with Solly's Beard. Of course, Trevor Rabin's live solos will always be compared directly with Steve Howe's, as Howe's traditional solo spots are for a lot of Yes fans an essential element of every Yes live show. There is always an enormous sense of anticipation to see which solo Howe will go for on the night, and of course they were always stunning performances. But here we have Rabin. The opening of Solly's Beard has muted keyboards in the background, which provide a subtle bed for Rabin's acoustic solo. It sounds dangerously close to daytime TV movie soundtrack music to me. It's very much a vocal theme played on guitar. There are passages of extreme virtuosity, and I'm reminded of violin works by Paganini in the approach that Rabin takes. The music sounds nothing like Paganini, but there's something about Rabin that reflects the Italian virtuoso's attitude and stature, both musicians being very tall and imposing characters, for example. There is light and shade here and a good deal of poise beside the frenetic runs. Rabin ramps up the tempo and really gets the crowd going at one point, then lets it ebb away before a dramatic crescendo and an accelerando. The solo has several contrasting sections and is masterfully put together. Overall, it's an impressive and engaging piece which showcases the depth of talent and creativity which Rabin brings to the band. The final track on side one is John Anderson's solo, Soon. This is just over 2 minutes of John Anderson and Tony Kaye, and it's much as you'd expect. At risk of committing blasphemy, I'd say Soon really doesn't work on its own. The whole point of where it was positioned at the end of the Gates of Delirium was as a resolution, a point of rest, order out of chaos. It makes little sense here as a separate piece. It needs all the build-up, all the tension for the release of the music to create the wonderful effect. It's rather like an operatic aria stuck in the middle of a Motorhead concert. Incongruous. Maybe I'm being a bit harsh, and it worked better in the context of a real show, but at the end of the side one of this record, it seems a waste. Side two begins with the other full track, Changes. The introduction is given a great live treatment, including a false start, which ramps up the excitement. It builds up really well, and there's an enormous sense of drive until Rabin blasts in with an extended version of what he does on the studio album. It's a fast wail of a solo moment, which then stops abruptly to let the original ostinato pattern re-establish itself. This is prog rock mayhem in an 80s stadium style, and it's hugely enjoyable. Eventually, Rabin starts the vocal line, and it's clear his live prowess extends to singing as well as guitar fireworks. Finally, Anderson enters for the chorus, and we are reminded that this is Yes, but in a brilliant reinvention of the band for the 80s. This section is close to the studio version until Rabin elaborates solo passages once again in heroic style. The whole band are fantastically together, and the sections of Light and Shade are highly effective. It's a wonderful performance of a great song. Of course, it's arguably more Rabin than Yes, but who cares when it's this good? So what do we get after the adrenaline rush of Changes at the start of Side 2? Well, it's Chris Squire's turn to take to the spotlight for his solo, Amazing Grace. We all know Squire is a larger-than-life character, and this solo reinforces that notion with its sheer level of surrealism. It's a highly bizarre little track. Quite why Squire thought that the hymn tune Amazing Grace would be a suitable theme for an extemporised bass solo is anyone's guess. Chris Squire was, of course, a choir boy, so maybe it's a tune ingrained in his mind from an earlier time. But does it work? It begins with a huge pulsating pedal note, a bit like a bagpipe drone, then Squire begins to play the theme over the top. And that's quite an apt expression. The whole piece could be described as over the top, which would of course match Squire's personality. The theme is recognisable, but the style in which Squire repeats each note, or perhaps his choice of effects pedal, gives it a strange texture. He also holds up the anti-penultimate note to create an odd suspension before resolving. At a total of 2 minutes and 10 seconds, the track is little more than a tiny diversion. I don't feel it's appropriate to represent the work of such a genius as Chris Squire with this bizarre little nugget. The last track, however, is Whitefish, a combination of Squire and Alan White, but also seems to include other band members. This certainly showcases Squire's bass playing in a much more significant way than the previous track. He improvises in classic style over a simple quiet drum and ostinato guitar part, presumably Rabin, figure at the start. Then the tempo is picked up and we hear the master at work with a fast and intricate line. This is Squire at his soloing best, playing archetypal lead bass guitar against Alan White's solid but creative rhythm. It's an absolute tour de force of brilliant technique, dexterity and musicianship, rivaling or surpassing Rabin's earlier track. Just over halfway through, Squire bursts into the bass figure from Tempus Fugit on Drama at a significantly faster speed than on the record. We are even treated to the Yes, Yes chorus. There are false stops and it's a really exciting fiesta until we then move into the bass and drum parts from Sound Chaser. This must have been amazing to hear live. Squire blasts out of the speakers and sounds on fire. If you haven't experienced this solo, then you must go out and find a copy, even if it's just on YouTube. Alan White matches Squire note for note, and it's also great to hear the original sound effects from Relayer in the background. The musicians pull the music up with a huge rallentando, and John Anderson finishes the album by presenting Squire and White to the crowd, referring to Squire as the Doctor. So overall then, there are parts of this album that every Yes fan should make a point of listening to. It captures some of the most important aspects of the band at this point in time. Yes have always been famous for their live shows, and the solos of the individual band members. Despite the fact that there is no Steve Howe, no Rick Wakeman here, it's a fascinating listen, and not just from a historical point of view. Maybe it would have been more sensible to release a longer album with more of the tracks from the soundtrack of 9012 Live, but there's still great stuff to discover here. Listening to it in its entirety now after many years, I can appreciate better what we have, a few large nuggets of gold amidst some less interesting material. So in a shorter episode this week, that's about it. Next week is another mystery album in a short episode. I wonder if you can guess what it will be. In the meantime, please do get involved at www.yesmusicpodcast.com, on Twitter at yesmusicpodcast, by email, show@yesmusicpodcast.com, by uploading a file or recording a voice message via the site, or by leaving a voicemail on 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417. So until next time, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.